This meeting is being recorded.
All right. So will you be using the video at all, or only using the text from transcribed audio?
I think it'll be text only from transcribed audio in the thesis.
So. Okay. Okay. But you will send me so I can check the transcription.
Of course.
Wonderful.
Of course,
wonderful.
Yeah.
So you let me know when you're ready to start.
So I've got my kind of a cheat sheet of notes here.
Okay, wait. Before you start, I want to say this is Athol Cassidy interviewing Yassos on August 13, 2020. Athol is in UK, Earth, and Yassos is on Maui, Earth.
So the first question is some general questions about the New Age classifications. So they're quite sort of broad questions. So first off, could I just get, what is your personal understanding of the term New Age music?
The meaning has changed quite a bit over the years. When it first began, New Age music meant music that can help you with your spiritual development, music that can help you meditate, help you relax, help you do yoga. That was the initial meaning of New Age music. Then later, the definition expanded to include all kinds of things like singing and even folk music. And it kept expanding to the point where now, in music stores, if they have music that doesn't fit a conventional category like rap or classical or jazz, then they just throw it in New Age. And so now, New Age means miscellaneous.
Right. So could I just go a bit further with that and ask, do you have a personal definition of generally the New Age movement and New Age?
Yeah, I wrote a whole article on that. Basically, I'll give a metaphor first, okay? Let's say Earth had been in darkness for 2,000 years. And let's say because of some astronomical events, it was gradually starting to come out into the light over a 20-year period. In the beginning, no one would see that light was approaching, but eventually only those people that were most light sensitive would say, "The light is coming, the light is coming, the light is coming." Everybody said, "You're crazy, you're crazy, you're crazy." Then eventually it'd get a little bit more light, and more people would be saying, "The light is coming, the light is coming." Everybody would say, "You're really wacko, loco, crazy." Then eventually there'd be more light, more, till eventually everybody sees, "Oh yeah, the light is coming." In a similar way, our planet is undergoing a vibrational upshift with a spiritual awakening. And in the beginning, only those people that are most light sensitive with the spiritual meaning of light are aware of it. And they're the ones that not only are sensing this increase in spirituality and high vibration, but they're also creating all kinds of tools to help other people enhance their awakeness. For example, acupuncture, Zen, Reiki, music, spiritual books, all kinds of methodologies to help others wake up. And then eventually more people wake up, more to reach the point where nowadays terms that were initially only New Age terms are becoming very common terms, like good vibes and karma, you know, are examples of terms that are commonly accepted now that initially were just New Age. Also, health food was a New Age term. Now it's a general term. So it's broadened out to include the whole population now.
Fantastic. So the next question I had was just to, would you classify your own music as New Age music?
Okay, just so you know, I personally don't give any importance to labels and classifications. To me, that's not important at all. Okay. And New Age is a huge, broad brush to paint with. So if you tell someone I do New Age music, it doesn't tell them anything. Now, people consider me one of the two initial founders of New Age music, along with Stephen Halpern. We each released our first album in 1975, and also my electric flute playing was on his album, so I was on both albums that started it. But I don't consider labels important at all. I don't associate much with New Age music, even though I'm considered one of the two founders of New Age music. The way I categorize my music is celestial, heavenly, interdimensional music.
I also heard you classify sections of your musical output as paradise music as well. Would you?
When I first started spontaneously hearing it in my mind, it was unlike any earthly music I'd ever heard. So I just called it paradox music because it reminded me of heaven. So now I've gradually morphed from calling it paradox music to call it heavenly, celestial, interdimensional music. But it means the same thing. Here's the thing. Some people have a subconscious memory of being in heavenly realms. Other people don't. Now, those people that have a subconscious vague memory of heavenly realms, when they hear my music, it reminds them of it, and it makes them homesick. Oh, that's like home, you know? Other people who don't have a clue about higher dimensions or heavenly realms, to them it's just strange sounds. So some people resonate with it, others don't, which is fine with me. But those that do resonate with it, they're reminded of the beauty and the harmony of heavenly realms. It reminded of them, and they get excited. Oh yeah, I remember that. That's where I came from, you know? So they get excited about it, and they love it for that reason. For others, it's just strange sounds, no resonance whatsoever. By the way, to continue that thought, musical tastes really boils down to emotional preferences, because music is a conductor of emotions, also a conductor of consciousness states, and people are attracted to music that generates feelings they like to feel. Some people like to feel rage, so they like heavy metal. Some people like romantic music, they like country music. Some people like rap music because of the hood vibe and all that stuff. And other people like heavenly, sweet heavenly music, so they like new age music, stuff like that. So musical preferences is really a function of emotional preferences. And musicians are really merchants selling emotions served on a platter of sound. What they're really selling is not the music, it's the emotions produced by the music. So people are attracted to that. Now, here's the interesting thing. You know, in statistics, they have a bell-shaped curve. That applies to emotions, where at the left end, you could say it's negative emotions like hate, fear, like that. And on the positive level, it's extreme love, extreme mercy, compassion, love, kindness, caring. And in the middle is where most people are, which is just feeling okay, feeling good. Well, pop music is in that middle of that emotional bell-shaped curve, which of course is why it's popular, because that's where most people resonate. There, it's the middle of the bell-shaped curve, which is why pop music is popular music, because that's the middle of the bell-shaped curve. Now, I'm an extremist. The music that I generate, it's at the far end, one end of the scale, which is ecstatic, heavenly music. And a lot of people can't resonate to that at all, which is fine with me. Some do, some don't. But the ones that do, you wouldn't believe the feedback I get. I have a section in my website called Quotes. And a lot of that is testimonials from famous people and organizations. But a lot of that is just unsolicited emails just from fans. And if you believe, you wouldn't believe all the wonderful things they have to say about what it did for them. So that's the end of that.
Question I had was, so do you think there is a clear outline in the purpose of interdimensional music or celestial music?
Well, there's no inherent innate purpose to anything, because the infinite creator did not create us with an obligation to do anything. So there's no built-in purpose to anything. You know, we exist, we can play all we like, basically, as far as the infinite creator is concerned. But in terms of my personal goals, I have a section on my website which is called Statement of Purpose, where I talk about it. But basically, it's to help people to connect with higher celestial dimensions and to help people connect with the higher octaves of their own being, their higher self, their I Am presence. It goes up in octaves. Basically, it's a branch out system. You have one infinite creator, and it branches out into some super, many, many super higher selves on lower dimensions, and each of those branches out into many, many higher selves on a lower dimension, and each of those branches out into many, many lower, higher selves on lower dimension, and each of those has many incarnations on physical dimensions like Earth, and you and I are some of those incarnations. So if you go up the branches, you eventually end up with just one eternal being. So in that sense, we're all brothers and sisters. So it's a branch system. It branches out on lower dimensions. Each time you go to lower dimension, it branches out to the many, many coming out from that one And then many, just like one branch has many twigs, and each twig can have many smaller twigs, the same idea. And so we're all connected that way.
Yeah, I think the, I was looking into some of the Ramtha. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Ramtha, the triangle.
Yes.
Jay-Z and I, that's a similar idea of the triangle of source, and then it's splitting itself out. And then
yeah, it's a branch system. It's like your artery system or like your nervous system. By the way, you don't need to limit yourself to those questions. If you pop up some other questions, include those too.
Will do. Thank you. This one's just going a little bit more specifically into the musical kind of features. So this one, do you have any broad comments regarding the musical features of music, which fits, as you say, I've got it as the purpose of New Age music. You have said that purpose not isn't super, but
the only thing you can say about New Age music is that in general, it tries to be harmonious, okay?
Yeah.
That's about the only generalization you can make. After that, it's really very miscellaneous. And a lot of it is even questionable on the harmonious part because it's, you know, tribal, ethno-rhythmic stuff from all over the world. And some people consider it harmonious, others would not. So it's the in-between questionable part. But in general, New Age music endeavors to be harmonious. That's about the only general brush I can point out.
That's great. I might just jump ahead. There's music composition bits. I might jump because there's a question. This is in the philosophy's idea. I wanted to ask a question just to follow on from that last point. In the use of harmonic consonants and dissonance, because you've mentioned the idea of coherence in interviews, do you mean by this, would you relating that to harmonic consonants versus dissonance? Is that your understanding of coherence in music?
Coherence can apply many different realms. It can apply to how coherent your energy field is around your body, because your body exists on many dimensions. You have the physical dimension, the flesh. You also have the emotional body, the mental body, the etheric body. So you exist on many dimensions simultaneously, all interactive with each other. They all influence each other. Your mind influences your emotions. Your emotions influence your mind. Your emotions influence your physical body. They all interact quite a bit. Coherence can apply to your body. The more coherent you are, the better you feel and the healthier you are as far as your body goes. Now, in music, I try to extremely avoid anything not coherent and to make my music as coherent as possible because it has a harmonizing effect, which is why I get reports like mothers saying they like to play my music when they're giving birth, and other people say they play it for the babies when they're trying to sleep, stuff like that, because it has a coherent... Let me give you an extreme example. I had a friend, Eric Rolf, who's a professional psychic, and when he was living on Maui, he was growing a garden. And there was a deva in charge of all the plants in the garden. A deva is a being from the nature kingdom, not a human being. And once a week, he'd go into a telepathic connection with this deva. And the deva would give him ideas for things to do to improve all the plants in the garden, like more water here, less sun there, stuff like that. And Eric Rolf liked to play Yasa's music for the garden, you know. So one day, he was having his weekly meeting with the deva to see what he should do for the garden. And the deva told Eric, get more Yasos music. So coherence, I'll give you another example. Once it was at a channeling with Saint Germain, and I asked Saint Germain a question, what kind of music do fairies like? And he gave a very profound answer. He said, fairies like music created by a balanced soul. The more balance, the more coherence. Musicians can only create music that generates the vibrations of who they are as a being. If you're sad, you're going to create sad music. If you're happy, you're going to create happy music. You can't help it. And especially the voice. The voice has embedded within it the spiritual state and the emotional state of the person at the instant they're making sounds with their voice. So you can pick up the phone with someone, and instantly you know their emotional state just from the tone of the voice, regardless of the words they use, because it's embedded within it. Are you there? Have I lost you? Hello? You're not moving. You're back.
You're back. Sorry, you froze just for a second there.
Yeah, you froze.
Sorry. We got up to a, You said when you pick up the phone, you can tell their emotional state immediately.
Yes. You can tell the emotional state, and for beings that are sensitive, also their spiritual state, just from the tone of your voice, because it's embedded within the tone of your voice.
Yes. Well, this is absolutely fantastic. It's, I'm going to jump around the questions because this is fantastic. You're touching on different orders, so I'll try not to miss anything out. But this would relate to...
You can go in any order you like and take all the time you like. You can jump around all you like, fill in the questions, jump around, and there's no rush on anything.
Thank you.
The only thing that's important is that you're having fun while you're doing it.
I am. This is fantastic. Thank you.
Good.
So you mentioned this idea of the idea of fairies kind of connecting to something that's being created by somebody who was in balance. This may relate to this question. I've got a question, which is, in your compositional process, do you have a notion of creating a sacred space to compose or record in? And if so, how do you personally create such a space?
My studio, for me, is a sacred temple that's dedicated to me receiving musical ideas from higher dimensions and materializing them, making them available on Earth as normal sound waves that anybody can hear. So I'm functioning as a step-down transformer or an importer of goods from higher dimensions, you know. In another lifetime, I was an importer of goods between Greece and Egypt. I'd buy things in Greece, sell them to Egypt, buy things in Egypt, sell them to Greece. Now I'm an importer of goods from higher dimensions, manifesting them here. So my temple, my studio, I think of it as a very sacred temple because that's where I do that work, which is why I don't like to allow pictures of my studio to go out to public, because if there's a picture of it, people can go there in consciousness, and I don't want just any old consciousness coming there. I would only want pure consciousness going there. So I don't want to make it publicly available because it's a very sacred space which I want to preserve that way. Now, what I do to maintain that space consciously, I just focus on my work of receiving and manifesting. However, I believe that there are devas that are assigned to my studio space to facilitate and enhance that process. I'd never requested it, but I'm sensing that they're there anyway. And if I move to a new location, they come with me to keep it that way, to keep it preserved as a very pure, not only pure, but also extremely mentally active, because there's a lot of mental activity to manifest that music. Now, the heart is the boss, but the mind is the implementer of the ideas and desires of the heart. So I get a feel, like recently, I was working on some music for Alpha and Omega, the God and Goddess for our Central Sun, and I wanted this phrase of Omega, the Goddess for our Central Sun, and it took me 3 nights to get it just right. So my heart knew what it wanted to hear. It took 3 nights of work for my mind to implement that to where it finally sounded right to my heart. And when I do it, how do I know I got it right? Well, I do it, and then I don't listen with my mind. When I finally get it right, then I set my mind aside. I say, oh, heart, so I start the playing of it, and I listen to it with my heart, and I see how my heart feels about it. If my heart feels, then I didn't get it. My heart feels, then I know I got it. Then I go on to the next thing I need to record.
Safe to assume that you would have a sort of a meditation practice before you went near an instrument or you started composing?
No.
Something along those lines?
No. I meditate every morning. I do transcendental meditation every day, but that's got nothing to do with me working on music at night. I work on music basically only at night because in the ancient mystery schools in many civilizations, they knew that the influence of the sun is to keep people grounded. And when the sun wasn't there, it was easier for the consciousness to float up to higher dimensions. And for that reason, I do my music work at night when the sun's not there, because it's easier to connect to higher dimensions when the sun's influence isn't there. So during the day, I focus on things like going to the post office, going to the bank, doing my emails to other people, and at night, I space out. I'm considered a well-grounded space case. I'm a quadruple Capricorn with the Neptune in my midheaven, and that Neptune is great for connecting, and the quadruple Capricorn is great for manifesting it, grounding it.
That's absolutely fascinating. Yeah, I love that. If it's okay to keep going with the creative process sort of questions, the next one that was followed on from that was was, in general, would you consider is your recording process often improvisational in nature, or do you prefer to have a more pre-planned approach? Or
about 98% of the time, it's not improvisational. About 98% of the time, it is what's the best possible melody that I could come up with in this context, rather than let me just improvise, see what happens. No, it's not like that. What's the best possible thing? I might do many takes till I get the best one, or I might hear it in my mind and do many takes till I get it the way I'm hearing it in my mind. So I'm not interested in, let's see how creative I can be in real time by improvising. I'm not interested in playing that ego game of how creative can I be in my improvising. I'm more interested in what's the best possible melody I can put here. And usually that's not improvising. Now, there have been two pieces I've done which were one pass, real time, which you could say is improvising. One was Oh, How Deeply Do I Love You. The other was Javanese Dream Bells. Those are done in real time, one pass, just doing it straight through. But except for those two pieces, it's always, what's the best possible thing I can do here, which is the exact opposite of improvising. Now, when I perform live in concert, I do some improvising. For example, I play flute with a lot of reverb on it, and I'm playing ancient Greek scales. And when I do that, I feel like a hawk flying high up in the sky. It really feels like that. I feel like I'm soaring when I'm playing flute with those scales. And you could hear some pieces on YouTube, like The Temples of Olympus at Dawn, for example, or The Winds of Olympus is another one, which would be playing flute with a lot of scales. So that's improvising. But in general, when I'm creating music, I'm not into the ego game of how creative can I be just improvising. I'm more into the, like, what's the best possible melody I can come up with here.
That may relate to a. I was looking at some of the sort of these kind of philosophies of the New Age sort of ideas, and I've got a question about channeling. So I sort of assume channeling would have an improvisational nature to it, but you must have a different feeling if it's coming. You then refine the information.
Okay, let me explain. I can only explain how it works for me. Okay.
Please. Yeah.
Okay. At a certain point in my life, I started hearing Paradise music in my mind, and I didn't know where it was coming from, but it was wonderful. I thought, gee, if I could create music like this, I don't think everybody would like it, but I bet a lot of people would like it. And it was not only unusual music, it was also unusual sounds. And this is before synthesizers existed. I was hearing unusual sounds. It wasn't like a trumpet and cello and violin and trombone. It was unusual sounds. But some voice inside my head said, you know, big boomy voice with the reverb, you can do this. Oh, really? Okay. So I trusted it. And then a few years later, I had one of the most profound experiences in my life, where I sensed a particular being on higher dimensions. And the instant that I sensed him, boom, I had flash recognition and memory. This being and I had made an agreement to work together. We made this agreement before I was born. And the agreement was I would incarnate on Earth, I would become proficient with music, then he would transmit music ideas and visual ideas as well to me, and I'd do my best to get it out there. And the purpose of this collaboration is not just for fame and fortune. The purpose of this collaboration was to create music that would facilitate people raising their vibrations so they could stay with the earth, as the earth itself is also raising its vibrations into a much more spiritual state filled with a lot more light. So now when I'm working on music, I don't go into a trance. I'm in a normal consciousness, but this being, like, psst, Yasos, try this, you know. He sends me hints of ideas. It's like I get an idea, and it's coming from him. You know, this being Vista. His name is Vista. And so I'm not in a trance. I'm in a normal state. But I keep getting subtle hints of ideas from Vista. Or sometimes I get visions. As a matter of fact, a funny story. When they want me to manifest a piece, let's say Vista. When Vista wants me to manifest a piece, he always honors my free will. I'm never obligated to do anything. So they tried to seduce me into committing to manifest it, because they know that I'm like a tank. Once I commit to manifesting it, nothing stops me. I could lose my house. I could lose my girlfriend. I still will manifest it. I'm like a tank. Nothing stops me once I commit to manifesting it. So they tried to get me to commit to manifesting it. How did they do it? they send me a vision of that peace in my mind that is so beautiful that it just melts my heart. I say, oh, okay, I commit manifesting. And they go, yay, yay, he committed, it's going to happen. Then they get excited because I committed to it.
Fantastic. So as you said earlier, there's a lot of revision on this initial idea. You'll get excited, but you're happy to keep revising until it feels just right, as you said, from the heart.
Yes.
Great. Let's see. Sorry, I don't want to jump around.
Jump around all you like. I don't care.
Okay. So to keep in the sort of the specifics of music composition.
I want to comment just on music composition. I ignore all musical concepts of chords and scales, and I simply try to duplicate with note combinations, how's my heart feeling? And I try different note combinations. See, the thing is, a chord is very magical and mysterious, and a scale is very magical and mysterious because a relationship of frequencies will induce a particular emotional effect. And it doesn't matter what the frequencies are, it matters the ratios between those frequencies. For example, you can do a C minor chord, C minor ninth chord will have a particular feeling. You can do a D flat minor ninth chord, it'll have the same feeling. The frequencies are different, but the ratios of frequencies are the same. So each ratio of frequencies produces a unique emotional effect. And so when I'm working on music, I just forget everything about music theory and I just simply, what note combinations reproduce the way my heart is feeling right now? And I experiment till I get the note that externally resonates with how my heart is feeling, which is a totally different approach than the mental approach, well, this scale should go to that chord and that chord should go to this chord. It has nothing to do with that. It has to do with how can I reproduce the feeling in my heart right now with note combinations, or I'll fool around with different things till I get a note combination, parentheses, a chord, or a scale that reproduces that. Each scale produces a unique emotional effect, and good classical composers have a palette of emotions at their disposal because they know that this scale produces this emotional effect, that scale produces that emotional effect, so depending on what emotion they want, they'll pick a scale that generates that emotion.
Looking at pieces, I originally, the main thing which sort of excited me at first, as it has in kind of previous analysis, was the intervallic relationship, the idea, we see a lot of this, and as you said, it sort of doesn't matter with the modulations, there's still a ratio which is present even.
The emotions generate has nothing to do with the frequencies you use, it has everything to do with the frequency ratios between the notes.
Beautiful, yeah, that's, so would, just kind of thinking, like would this be something you might relate to an idea of sacred geometry, something like that? Is it sort of similar to those kind of concepts?
I personally avoid playing that intellectual game of associating sacred geometry to music and chords. Now, I believe in sacred geometry. I think sacred geometry reveals some of God's favorite patterns, like the golden mean ratio and stuff like that. But with music, I set all that mental game aside. And I just simply say, how's my heart feeling? How can I come up with a note combination that reproduces that feeling? It has nothing to do with the mental concept of, let me use sacred geometry. As a matter of fact, the funny thing is, I've fooled around with certain sacred geometry translating into music, like the Fibonacci sequence. I don't know if you're familiar with that. I tried putting that into sound to see what it feel like, sound like. And it was horrible. It was just horrible. It was really dissonant. Oh, man. So, yeah, I set that aside. You know, putting those different frequencies together, it really clashes horribly. Just really horribly. So, I don't play any mental intellectual games with my music composing. I just flat out try to figure out note combinations that are duplicating the feeling happening then in my heart.
That's beautiful. Yeah. I love it. Yes, so as I said, the intervallic thing was of interest at first, but then of course, as we spoke briefly about yesterday, there's the idea of when there's something more sustained, for example, a held chord, or then the sort of timbral elements becoming something.
The what?
Sorry, the timbral elements, the tone
manipulation. Yes, yes.
Sort of elements. This, the, like, you've mentioned before vocoder's been something. Could you comment on how you've used vocoder for these kind of sound manipulations in your composition?
Okay, vocoder is the most underappreciated, underused special effect for sound I know of. They use it in the most silly, obvious ways, like for robot voices, you know. But basically, a vocoder is a way, a very organically flexible way to filter, sculpture the tone of a sound in real time. And you can have any sound, like a synthesizer holding a chord or even changing chords, whatever the sound is coming into it, it can get filtered in real time. Like imagine having a 27-band EQ. You know, EQ, for those that don't know, it's like a, you know, a normal amplifier, you have a bass and treble, so you're dividing the sound into two frequency ranges. In the bass one, you can boost it or turn it down. In the treble, you can boost it or turn it down. Well, instead of just two bands, imagine 27 bands, and each one is a small band, and each one you can emphasize it or de-emphasize it. So that's what an EQ is, like a graphic EQ. And so imagine having 27 bands, and each one of them, you can adjust the frequencies of each band to emphasize them or de-emphasize them any way you like. But instead of manually controlling each slider, your voice is analyzed, and those sliders filtering another sound, not your voice filtering another sound, are moved up and down according to how your voice is. So you have two things happening. You have your voice with having an analyzer for 27 bands. So if you make it sound like sss, it knows the high frequencies really emphasize, everything else is turned down. If you make it sound like mmm, it's mostly the lower frequencies that are emphasized, everything else turned down. If you go ah or oh, it's the medium frequencies that are emphasized, and the low and high are turned down. And so just by going ah, ooh, ah, ee, ah, oh, the other sound gets filtered instantaneously in real time according to how your voice changed. And therefore, it's a very organic, real-time way to sculpt or filter any sound going into the vocoder according to the tone of your voice. Now, having said that, you can use it for scale. I can even use it for rhythm, because if there's no sound coming from the microphone, it's like turning down all the dials so you don't get any sound on the other sound coming through. So I go, and the other sound will jump up and down according to my voice, because my voice is silent, the other sound is silent. So you can use it for rhythmic effects. You can use it to subtly filter a sustained chord. Or one way that I really like using it is if you have a melody, you can go, oh, yeah, oh, and it's like subtle, organic, feminine changes on the melody sound. So those are different ways to use a vocoder.
And would this be, you mentioned doing it in real time, would this be something you might overdub to get just the vocoder, so you've recorded the, I'm thinking more kind of MIDI, I suppose, and then automating the vocoder? Are you talking like like you do as many takes as the vocoder until it felt like, as you said?
There are two different ways of doing it. I could record a sound so it's recorded, and then I could feed the track of that audio recording into a vocoder and sing with my voice to filter that sound and record that on another track. Or I can be playing a keyboard, triggering any sound I want, and then filtering that with my voice while I'm playing the keyboard. So it can be real time or non-real time.
Is this something you find, something you might spend a lot of time on in the creative process, retaking up vocoders to try and get it just right?
There's no general answer to that. In each case, I just keep doing till it feels right, then I go on to the next thing.
Excellent. Yeah.
With vocoder, it might take like four or five passes, because I've gotten really familiar with how my voice affects the filtering of other sounds.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Fantastic. If you could comment on any further techniques for tonal manipulation.
I didn't hear the word you said. Techniques for what?
I mumbled out. Apologies there. So yeah, if you could comment on any further techniques that you've used for manipulating sound quality, tone. There was something I was curious about, the crystal fountain of light. I was just listening, and could you remember specifically the harp-like quality, how that was achieved as well?
Well, nowadays it'd be a lot easier than it was then. because then I didn't have a harp controller. Now I have a harp controller, which would make something like that really easy, because I can, maybe I can show it to you. Well, I have a piece of equipment that has two strips, and it has a MIDI output, and on each strip is a whole bunch of buttons. And if I run my finger along it, so you can define the scale and the key that you want each strip to be. Each strip can be any key, any scale. And that has a MIDI output, which you can use to run anything, like a harp sound or a bell sound or a trumpet sound, anything. And so now it's easy because I can just slide up and down. But when I did the Crystal Fountain of Light, curiously, by the way, when I get royalties for my music, strangely, the thing that always brings me the most royalties is the Crystal Fountain of Light. And to me, that's a sound. It's not even music. It's just a sound. But strangely enough, who can predict, right? That's the one that gives me the most royalties. But when I did that, I didn't have the harp controller. But I needed a way to slide quickly between the notes. So I got, you know how yogurt, plastic yogurt containers often come in a cylinder, a trapezoid cylinder, which is wider at the top and narrower at the bottom? It's a plastic cylinder. It could be exactly a cylinder, but it tends to be wider at the top and narrower at the bottom. A plastic cylinder. Anyway, I had an empty plastic yogurt container with a width of about like this, okay? And I would slide that along the white notes of a keyboard. You're going like that. Because as it hit the keyboard, it was like a wheel, so you could slide between them. And because it was plastic, it was slippery. So I'd slide between them. So I did that just to get like strumming a harp. But then I did that with the high crystal tones, and that's how I did the Crystal Fountain of Light in those days.
Oh, that's any other general things you wanted to say about kind of any post-production things to go towards the celestial kind of quality of the sound? Or
the most important thing for getting the celestial quality of the sound is your consciousness and your heart connecting to celestial dimensions. Forget about technique, forget about equipment. The important thing is you as a being connecting to those dimensions. I have a colleague and friend, Aeolia, who also is very connected to celestial realms with his music. And in my understanding, his music specializes in the spiritual quality of devotion. That's his emotional specialty in his music, spiritual devotion. He's connected to celestial realms, and I think I am. I don't think there are too many musicians that authentically are, but I know he is, I know I am. So the important thing is just to do your best in meditation or whatever it takes to connect to those realms. And once you're connected to those realms, then create music. Then manifest it. Because even if you're just holding a note with your voice, it'll have that celestial quality if you're in that space where you're doing it. The important thing is not technique or special effects. The important thing is being in that state of consciousness, being in that resonance of the high frequency realms. I think a lot of my music is a vibrational gateway to help people connect to higher dimensions through sound. And the interesting thing is, a person can listen to a piece of my music and it can connect them to a heavenly higher dimensional realm. They can listen to it a few times and it connects them each time to the higher dimensional realm. And it's like training the wheels. Eventually, you don't need the music. Once you've been there a few times, you can get there without the music. So it's like introducing you to celestial realms or introducing you to higher octave feelings. And let me explain about feelings. All emotions are different frequencies, okay? And just as there are octaves of sound, like low, middle C, higher octave C, etc. An octave, for those who don't know, an octave lower means half the frequency. An octave higher means twice the frequency. La, la. The second note I did was twice the frequency of the first note. La, la. This was an octave lower, meaning half the frequency. So that's what octaves are. Doubling in frequency or halving in frequency if you go lower. Well, emotions happen in frequencies also. You can have an emotion like gladness. An octave higher is happiness. An octave higher is joy, ecstasy, rapture, and it keeps going up to infinity. Now, most humans don't experience those emotions. higher than that. Angels cruise about 3 octaves higher than rapture, the humans experience. That's normal for them, where they normally stay. when I tune into God, I get two emotions. When I tune into the infinite creator, I get emotion of a... I don't know if this will translate in this recording. Let me see if I can get it. An emotion of such subtle, refined ecstasy that the best way I can convey it is with this sound. Could you hear that?
Well, I could hear that.
Yeah, so, and then the other emotion I get from the infinite creator is just this extreme sweet loving of everything in creation, even evil people, just everything, just loving them so much. God bless them. They don't know what they're doing. They don't realize what they're doing. God, I love them anyway. It's like this, when they say it's unconditional love, it really is unconditional love. And loving every tiny little electron, particle, neutrino, everything. Loving the galaxies, loving humans, loving giraffes, loving rocks, loving plants, loving worms, loving everything, even down to the tiniest, tiniest little electron. Once I was having this conversation with the infinite creator, and God said to me, how can I not love everything? It's me. So, with my music, it can help people connect with higher octave versions of emotions they already are familiar with. For example, instead of the emotion of joy, they could experience through the music extreme ecstatic feelings, which normally they wouldn't feel. So once it introduces them a few times, then they can access it without the music. Or instead of just love, it can introduce them to a sweet, unconditional, infinite love for everything in creation. And for some people, it might be a new feeling. But if they listen to it a few times and feel it a few times, then they don't need the training wheels of the music anymore. They can get there without the music. So my music can be used to familiarize people with higher octave celestial realms, and it can also be used to familiarize people with higher octave versions of harmonious emotions. By the way, one more thing about emotions. There's a certain frequency, border frequency, above which is harmonious all the way to infinity, but from that frequency down, it's only negative emotions like fear, hate, anger, jealousy, etc. And the cutoff point is sort of like boredom and melancholy. It's in that range, the cutoff. And below that, it's only negative emotions all the way down to zero frequency. Zero frequency is being frozen in fear. You can't get any lower than that. When you're frozen in fear, your breathing stops, it's zero frequency emotionally and in your breathing also. You're frozen in fear, literally frozen emotionally as well. So negative emotions is a very limited range from that certain cutoff frequency of melancholy or boredom all the way down to zero frequency. But positive emotions is an infinite range because there's no upper limit to it. It goes from that frequency all the way up to infinity. And as you get more flexible emotionally, you can access higher and higher versions of emotions that you already know and like.
Fantastic. That's super inspirational. I'm sorry, I'm just going to look through these notes. Just see.
Don't be sorry, be happy.
Yeah. Don't say that.
We're not in a rush, so you can take your time.
Oh, thank you. This was just to go back to the sort of general kind of genre kind of question of New Age. I was just going to ask: are there any musicians who don't self-identify as New Age musicians that you feel are producing the type of music which fulfills the same criteria, the same purpose of connecting to higher celestial realms? And would you say, does anybody come to mind?
No.
Nobody, no, it's getting right. That's absolutely fine, yeah. I think you've touched on this earlier, but are there any musical gestures you would actively avoid in creating interdimensional music, or is that case-by-case basis?
Yeah. Well, there's a particular scale I would avoid.
Really?
Yeah. You know, different scales produce different emotional effects, right? In ancient Greece, they're very familiar with the emotional effects of scales, and there's one scale they always avoided because it had a very depressing effect. That scale is very popular nowadays. It's called the blues scale. And why do they call it the blues scale? Because I got the blues. What does that mean? It means you're depressed. So it's very well named. The blues scale is perfectly named. It's blues. I got the blues, you know. And I would never use that scale. I would never use that scale because it has a depressing effect, you know. Another thing I would never use is a fuzz tone. And now, fuzz tone is very popular nowadays. When you go to heaven, there ain't no fuzz tone there. You're not going to notice any fuzz tone in heaven. Why? Well, fuzz tone, if you see it on an oscilloscope, it has sharp corners in it. Most wave shapes are just smooth curves. But a fuzz tone has a sharp corner in it because basically it was a smooth curve, but they clipped it. So then it becomes a sharp with two sharp points. And those sharp points function as the emotional equivalent of a chainsaw. It cuts holes, you know, it cuts holes in your emotion body. So people like it because it's a very passionate effect. And it is a very passionate effect, but excuse me, just a second. But it has a very damaging effect on your emotions. Now, it's not quite so bad. If you filter the high frequencies, then it's putting round corners in those sharp things, then it's not so bad. And I myself do that myself. I might start off with a fuzz tone, but then filter the high frequencies so those sharp corners become more curved. And then it doesn't cut up your emotional body like that. But in heaven, you're not going to notice any fuzz tone at all.
Fascinating, but yeah.
You know, I got to tell you something funny. I used to emulate Jimi Hendrix because I was very impressed by him. I consider him quite a genius, although a lot of the emotions in his music are harsh, but still he's an emotional genius, and I learned a lot from him. So on my flute, I used to be very talented, very skilled on flute. I had a lot of technique developed for flute. And I tried to imitate his passionate effects on flute. And no matter what I did, I couldn't do it until eventually, it dawned on me. That's because of the tone of the flute. You know, he's doing fuzz guitar, which has a passionate effect. Flute does not have a passionate effect. It's good for other things, but not for that. So the tone affects the emotion. So I gave up on that for flute, but I could get that effect with other sounds.
Okay, sorry, we're jumping around.
Don't be sorry, it's okay to jump around.
So this one is I've been interested in the notion of timelessness or a timeless state, which is often mentioned in near-death experiences, for example. And how that may relate to music and the compositional process. Would you have any thoughts on that?
I got a lot of thoughts on that one. Okay, time is an illusion created by your consciousness. It's experiencing many still frames at a very rapid rate, trillions and trillions of times a second, creating the illusion of continuity. But when you're outside a time-space matrix, for example, when you incarnate, your higher self's in a state of timelessness where it's all happening now. When you incarnate in a time-space matrix, then there's distance here and there, and there's time before, now, and future. But when you're outside of a time-space matrix, when you're not in an incarnation, it's all happening right now. There's no time. It's an illusion. Okay? Now, as a musician, I think of myself as a time architect. A normal architect creates structures in space. I create structures in time. So I'm a time architect. And after many years of thinking myself as a time architect, I thought, wait a minute. I'm a time architect, and time's an illusion? That means I'm an architect of an illusion? Oh, no. But that's the way it works. When people go to higher states of consciousness, they pop out of conventional space and time because in higher dimensions, everything is right here, right now. There's no space and there's no time. It's all happening now. So many people like near-death experiences or any kind of drug-induced experience or meditation-induced experience or fasting-induced experience can achieve states of timelessness, which is more the reality, times the illusion, timeless is more reality. And so sometimes I've attempted to recreate that with sound. I have an album called Timeless Sound, which in a sense is a paradox because it's happening in time, you know. But it's my attempt to recreate that. But it's a common experience when people get glimpses of higher consciousness states, because that's the reality. It's all happening now. When people have a near-death experience, they could have the subjective sense of being there for months. They come back, they've been gone 3 minutes. You know, so it's totally different. Also, on higher dimensions, they can still be in a time-space matrix where they experience time, but the rate of flow of time can be different than what we have here. So, 1 minute there might be 2 years here. That's the amount of time. It's a function of that. I had a channeling recently with Bashar, and I asked him what the frame rate is, because I know that our consciousness here on Earth experiences continuity of time from a lot of actual still frames happening at a very fast pace. And he confirmed what I suspected was, is Planck's constant determines the frequency for the dimension that we're in. And people's rate of experiencing still frames, like a film projector showing 24 pictures a second to create the sense of continuity, or video being 29.97 pictures a second to create the sense of continuity. Likewise, our consciousness creates a sense of continuity by projecting frames at trillions and trillions and trillions and trillions of times a second, the frequency of the Planck's constant, which is a stationary number, which is the flash rate for the dimension that we're in, this physical dimension. Other dimensions have other flash rates, but this dimension, Planck's constant, determines the flash rate of the dimension that we're in.
So, just to unpack that a bit further, in experiential terms, on a higher plane, a higher density of experience, is this just the feeling of the passage of time, or perception of experience will be more vivid? What's that sort of hinting at a higher...
Well, you asked that general question. Any and all of that.
Okay, right.
I mean, that's a very general question you're asking. Yeah,
I'm just trying to get a feel for...
All of it.
Use that constant here. Fantastic. I love it. That was a wonderful answer to timelessness. That's great. Thank you. So we've talked about channeling. That was great.
I don't really channel, but I get hints of ideas from Vista.
Hints. I love that, yes. So another concept which would be interesting in how it relates to sort of music creation, and I know you've mentioned this before, would be the intention. If there's anything more you wanted to talk about intention and floating the intention on sound.
Floating is very important. Intention is very important. There are four ways that sound healing can occur. Physical resonance, emotional resonance, intention, and belief. Now, intention means... I'll give an analogy, okay? If you're by the side of a lake and a boat passes by near you, it'll create waves, and as those waves approach the shore where you are, you'll see these long rolling waves like this coming in and out from the boat, right? Now, if you throw a tiny pebble in the water while that's happening, the little pebble will create fast little ripples like this. But if you throw it in while the big waves are coming, then you have tiny little waves riding on top of the big wave. So you can have tiny little waves riding on top of a big wave. In the same way, intention can ride on top of sound. Intention can be embedded within sound, just like tiny waves can be embedded within big waves. Heterodyning, they call it, where one wave is embedded within a bigger wave. So intention can be embedded within sound. So when you create music, when I create music, I have a very strong, clear, positive intention to create uplifting effects only. Some of it should be very soothing, relaxed. Some of it is very stimulating and ecstatic, but in all cases, uplifting only, okay? But here's the magic of intention. So if someone plays that music, they get that uplifting effect because it's embedded in the music. But intention is so powerful that it works even if you're not the person that created the sound. For example, let's say a friend of mine is sad or sick or depressed, and I want to make him feel better. and I pick out a CD created by someone else, not me, that has an uplifting effect, and I play it for them, while that sound is coming out of the speaker, I can intend to project onto that sound an intention of upliftment. And that person will get that uplifting intention even though I didn't create that sound, someone else did. So you can project intention even on sounds that someone else created, and it'll still be embedded within that sound if you do it solidly and clearly. It'll have that effect. So intention is very, very powerful. Since we're on that topic, let me talk about the three other ways that sound healing works. Physical resonance is based on sound waves pushing your body. Okay, if it's a coherent sound, like hitting a gong or turning around a quartz bowl or Tibetan bowl, those are very coherent sounds, so they rearrange your body in a very coherent way. There's cymatics videos, which shows a lot of random sand on the flat surface directly above a speaker, and when they put different frequencies on it, that's the plate vibrates because of the frequency of the sound, and when there's a camera looking at it, the random shapes magically rearrange themselves into perfectly organic symmetric patterns. That's called cymatics. So that shows you how sound can induce coherency, creating coherency out of randomness. So that's how physical resonance works, and it's usually done with just one sound rather than a whole orchestra. For example, a gong or Tibetan bowls or a person making a sound with their voice, toning. You know, that's how physical resonance works. The second way is emotional resonance. The way that works is music affects your emotions. Your emotions affect your health. If you have harmonious music, it tends to generate harmonious emotions, and then the harmonious emotions have a positive effect on your health. And another way it works is harmonious music creates harmonious emotions. Harmonious emotions create optimistic thoughts, and then the optimistic thoughts also have a positive effect on your health. So harmonious music creates harmonious feelings and harmonious thoughts, and both of those have a positive effect on your health. That's how emotional resonance works for healing with sound. And then the third way, I already mentioned intention. The fourth way is belief. If you believe something is healing, it will be healing, because belief is the bottom line for everything. So you could have the most destructive sound you can imagine, like maybe a jackhammer or a machine gun, and if you can convince someone this sound will heal you, it actually will heal them, because belief is the bottom line for everything. So those are the four different ways that sound healing occurs, the mechanics, mechanically speaking, the four different ways that sound healing occurs.
Oh, absolutely fantastic. That's great. And that covers the next question, which was the principles for music for healing. So that's covered that awesomely. Thank you. Just a further, we've probably have covered this, but are there any general thoughts on music for meditation specifically? Is there any general thoughts, and also specifically how you feel it can enhance a meditation group, for example, and why?
Yeah, it's funny because to me meditation means blocking out all sensory input and going within, and music is sensory input, so it interferes with meditation. That's just for me. When I meditate, I don't want to use music. I put on earplugs. I don't want to hear anything. I don't want to hear the birds outside or the telephones. I just want to go within. All sensory input is a distraction to meditation, to me. But some people have difficulty going within, and so for them, sound can be a helpful aid to meditation because it calms them emotionally. So you can use meditation music. A lot of people use some of my music for meditation, like they'll use Cloud Prayer or Throne Realms or the Angels of Comfort. They use certain pieces I've done for meditation specifically because it slows them down, it calms them down emotionally, so it's easier for them to go within. But personally for me, I think it's funny because all sound, all external stimulus to me is a distraction from going within. You know? But a lot of people do use it that way, and it's helpful for them, so I'm happy that it's helpful for them.
Well, I think that's covered the majority of the kind of music specific things. I've got some general sort of background questions, if that's okay.
Everything's okay.
Could you describe any formal training you have had in music?
Yeah. When I was 8 years old, I took piano lessons in grade school. And then when I was 10 years old, I took piano lessons also in grade school. My formal training on piano and flute was only in grade school and high school. After that, I was self-taught. When I was at Cornell University, I learned a lot about music, scales, and chords simply by playing my flute along with classical music. And I could figure out in real time what the scales and chords were. So I learned a lot about scales and chords just by analyzing classical music, by playing flute along with it, and figuring out in real time what the scales were that were happening. Then, when I graduated from Cornell, I came to California to work on music, make it my career. And I took jazz piano lessons. That was so ridiculous. The teacher gave me certain chords to play, and those chords were so dissonant in my heart. I just couldn't do it. I just stopped. I couldn't do it. It was so dissonant. I just couldn't get into it. So forget that. That's not me at all. So that was the end of my formal training. So basically, forget training. Just listen to your heart. Forget training. Listen to your heart and figure out how to externalize with note combinations whatever feeling your heart is having in the moment.
So the next question was, could you describe any bands or projects you've been involved in which weren't necessarily related to the music you produce now? And if so, in what way did this influence the music you now make and your creative process?
No.
You've been in no other, no problem. So you've always been in this, once you found this was the only style and you had to follow that?
I don't have to anything.
Okay,
I choose to. Yeah. When I was at Cornell, I had a smooth band on campus. At Cornell, they had rock bands and smooth bands, and I had the best smooth band on campus, the Nova Shadow Quartet. And that was basically playing jazz and ballads, you know. The Shadow of Your Smile, The Girl from Ipanema, you know, stuff like that in jazz.
Yeah.
But during those years, we were doing that. We would get gigs, you know, we'd get paid gigs, play at fraternities. But then I started hearing Paradise Music in my mind, and I figured, gee, I want to make this my career. So when I graduated from Cornell, I came to California to actually make it my career.
Was there anything about the gigging experience that might have helped in some way?
No, you don't
feel that? You felt that was a separate sort of...
Well, I was doing music, getting paid... You know, I met a beautiful woman at some fraternity. She ended up becoming my girlfriend. She's so beautiful, my eyes popped out. That was because I was doing that gig. That made the whole thing worthwhile.
Oh, fantastic. I think, and then the just final thing for the questions would be, are there any other points you would like to make before we finish the session? Anything you think is important to bring up relating to any of the topics?
Yes.
Or anything you want to bring up in general?
The most important thing is to focus on your heart, because your heart is your connection to your higher self. Your heart is your connection to the infinite creator. Your heart is your connection to getting guidance from above. This is true not only for music creation, but also for running your life in general. You have to be very discriminating and discerning about who you choose to interact with and who you do business with. You have to be extremely discerning and discriminating, but be totally indiscriminate about who you love. Love everybody indiscriminately. Just like they say, the sun shines on saint and sinner alike. The sun shines on everybody indiscriminately. Likewise, let your heart be a sun spreading love to everyone, even the most evil people you can think of. Actually, the evil ones are the ones who need the love the most. You know, send your love to everybody. So pay more attention to your heart. Go within. It's as simple as focusing your attention here instead of out here. Focus your attention, close your eyes, focus your attention in there. And here's the interesting thing. The simplest way to raise your frequency, which a lot of people in the New Age want to do, raise your frequencies, is simply to focus on God or the infinite creator, every second your attention is on that, you're raising your frequency. And if that's difficult, all you have to do is focus your attention on your connection to the infinite creator, which is in the very center of your heart. Just close your eyes, take a few slow deep breaths to calm down and get centered, and then focus your attention there. And every second that your attention is there, all of your energy fields are getting more coherent, and you're raising your vibration. Focus on your heart. Very important, very beneficial.
Oh, fantastic. What a beautiful message to finish on. That's amazing. I just want to say thank you so much for every single answer. It was truly inspirational, and I'm excited to look over the transcription later and really kind of unpack some of the ideas you've kind of thrown out there. Really, really amazing and inspirational for creating music as well. There's so many elements of that I really want to get into. And thank you so much again for your time today. That's been amazing.
Thank you, Athol. It's been wonderful. Whenever you do release it, I'm sure you'll let me know about it so I can check the transcription.
Yes, the moment the transcription's done, I'll send it straight across. And as I say, anything you want to kind of like look over or kind of just let me know. That's kind of anything you want to change, absolutely perfect. That's hopefully that should be done soon. I can send that across.
There's no rush.
Okay.
For me, there's no rush. Take your time. There's no rush.
So there's going to be a few pieces of analysis, and then maybe taking bits of the interview as well and kind of supporting certain things, noticing in the music, that kind of thing. So I'm really excited because there's been so much there to support some of the ideas. And would you have any particular pieces I was wondering that earlier, actually. Is there any piece you would sort of suggest, or you might want to look at this, you might want to, because I've got my own sort of things in mind, but is there anything specifically you might think is of particular, there's some hidden aspect to, or?
Well, if they want to hear one happy, ecstatic piece, they can listen to, this is from my Essence of Lemuria album, and it's called Smooth Sailing Over Enchanted Lands.
I know it, yeah, great. I'll take a peek, that's great.
And if they want something for a sense of unconditional love, they can listen to The Angels of Comfort, which is the extended version is on my Angelic Music album.
The extended version, that sounds great. Thank you. I was interested if you'd have your own take on what you might suggest. So that's, thank you for that. I'm looking forward to having a peek at those two. That's great. Thank you. but thank you again so much. I've thoroughly enjoyed every second of that. It's so much.
So did you have fun?
I really did. I was nervous to make sure I hit on everything, but I really enjoyed everything.
Oh, good. Oh, good. I had fun also.
I'm really glad. Thank you again. As I say, I'll keep you posted at every step of the sort of the process. And again, really inspirational. Looking forward to going back over it, because there's so much in there coming through, so many ideas to really get into. So again, my gratitude.
Much love to you, Athol.
You too, now. Thanks so much, and I'll be in touch soon.
Okay, bye-bye.
Take care, have a great day. Bye-bye.